from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of June 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's grain stocks and acreage figures and the reaction in Chicago with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Yesterday, the United States Senate passed its version of the Farm Bill. It will now go to conference to be put together with the House version of that bill, which passed last week. Rodney Davis, U.S. House of Representatives, may very well be a committee member on that conference. He was in the last bill in 2014. We'll talk to him about how it may be put together and the differences between the two versions of the bill and what will happen prior to the time that finalized bill goes to the president's desk for his signature. A bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast too, as we always do on a Friday with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. It all happens right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Friday afternoon, we are joined by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to take a look at the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'd like to say that USDA's grain stocks and acreage reports had the biggest impact on the market today. But given the change in the acreage numbers for corn and soybeans, I'm surprised that the market wasn't lower. Corn, in fact, if you just look forward into the WASDE or grain star, the WASDE figures for July and use 174 and its harvested acreage, it goes up 186 million for the ending stocks. And heck, corn managed to finish higher. Why was that the case?
Well, I think a couple things. We had a pretty significant change in global fundamentals in the wheat market. We've seen several changes to the Russian crop size and several changes to the French and German and therefore the European Union crop size, both in terms of wheat. And we are getting more intelligence, I guess I would say it that way, Todd, from a standpoint of the Ukrainian crop. All three of these countries are seeing substantial declines in their wheat production figures as they ramp up their harvest. And because of the hot, dry weather in some key areas and then in other areas like in Siberia, in parts of Russia, too much cold, wet weather, further crop degradation and further crop production decreases may be seen. And I think this is where we were able to get back up above the 200-day moving average in the Kansas City wheat, and we saw a really strong performance in the wheat complex as a whole for the week, up about 6 cents. This is even though the corn was down 7 and the beans down 36. So I think that was kind of the heart and soul to the market. We had very light deliveries. We've got a very important key player that will go up in terms of importance next week is the U.S. Corn Belt weather, with a very even pollination window starting to be seen all the way across the country and all the way across the primary Corn Belt. And I would say that's going to be an extremely valuable piece of the puzzle next week, depending on how hot and dry we remain from today all the way through next Friday, especially given the acreage report showing that our state of Kansas is the number 5 corn state in the country as far as planted acres. So our Corn Belt is stretched out more this year, it seems to me, than in the past couple of years. So,
If Kansas is now number 5, that would make us into a drier area than we've been before, I would suppose, and more subject to droughty conditions and warm weather from now right on through the harvest season.
Yeah, I think your point is very well taken. We may not know what the potential damage is. First, we got to get to the point where we're hot enough and dry enough that the trade kind of backs off what I think they're already trading in terms of a near 180 national yield. I've heard that so much in the past couple of weeks. And quite honestly, I think the corn traders, had a breath of relief and sighed a breath of relief because of the report today not being negative in terms of beating and going over trade expectations. So that would, to me, would explain a lot of why we saw the trade so strongly in the feed grains and go back to buying corn and selling beans, even though beans technically, in my view, got the better reports, both in terms of stocks and acreage.
I would think going forward, the weekly crop conditions and ratings reports might be interesting to watch, simply because the crop, actually given the amount of moisture that's in the ground, even with the heat, could look really good, but pollination or nick could go really bad. It could be deceiving as you drive across the country.
Yeah, and I'm wondering whether the trade isn't going to try and refine that a little bit more and maybe rely less upon the crop conditions, because they have been such a bad, not bad, but less useful indicator the last 3 or 4 years. And Lord knows they burnt me in terms of expecting a lower yield and coming in with very high yields. And with us being 10% above last year and good to excellent in corn, I'm certainly not putting as much weight in the crop conditions this year for yield estimates as I have in years past.
I'd like to bring you back to the wheat conversation really quickly, something I thought about as you were discussing those numbers, not only from here in the United States, but from across the northern hemisphere. If the wheat crop really is suffering from dry weather conditions, and it appears to be across a large part of the growing regions, that means that the protein will be higher in that wheat. And it won't be feedstuff. That which is there will be used for food consumption. That's almost a double whammy in terms of, you know, relatively speaking, fewer bushels. And then you've got those bushels mostly going into the food supply because of the protein content.
Yeah, keeping wheat out of the feed category. I think you're right on point. I talked to one of the NAS guys today, because the European Union did come in and cut their wheat crop down to about 138 million tons. Well, this compares to almost 150 from USDA's report a couple of weeks ago, and they're always different. They both use different sets of criteria and measurement and actually different industrial or industry participants and different boots on the ground and intelligence. So they're not hardly ever the same, but the spread between them is so wide that your point is very, very well taken. Because you could continue to see a wheat corn spread stay elevated at a dollar plus because of this higher protein and the ability to mix last year's poor protein crop. And I already started to hear more of that as we've gotten more hard red wheat harvested here in this state.
Can we take up the grain stocks numbers? Maybe we have a minute or so, not much more than that, and then I'll have you back for Commodity Week in just a bit. But when I was looking at the on and off farm stocks for corn, still more corn on the farm than there is off the farm. That seems pretty scary.
Now, I showed the on-farm stocks down about 2.5% versus last year. The farmers holding less than last year at this time, and I actually showed that elevators are holding about 7% more corn than last year. So I saw it a bit differently, that elevators are...
Oh, maybe I may have just put them in the wrong. So I've got 2750 in the on-farm category. And 255 in the off farm. Maybe I'll take a look. Maybe I just put them in the wrong slots when I transferred them over. That's a possibility. So
yeah, I'll do the same thing because it has been a crazy day.
It has been. Hey, I'll talk to you in about 10 minutes when we get started with Commodity Week. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, sir.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Well, if you've been listening for a while, you know that I was in Assumption, Illinois to help kick off their agricultural festival. It'll happen for the next couple of days, and I hope that if you're in the area, you get a chance to drop by Assumption Fest. My thanks go to the folks who invited us down and to all of the panelists that joined us, including Kurt Kimmel, Ellen Dearden, Dan Zwicker, and Kim Holzapfel. We had a good morning trying to figure out what USDA would release at 11 a.m. today. And then, of course, those numbers were released, and we'll talk more about those in a bit when we get to Commodity Week. But I do want to bring up one other item. The Farm Bill was passed out of the Senate yesterday. U.S. House of Representatives Rodney Davis was in Assumption. He's from that area to talk about what the House passed and what the Senate passed and how it might have to be worked out in conference. There are some interesting functions that will take place before this goes to the president's desk for his signature. They'll need to work out details on whether or not the SNAP requirements for work will be included. That was the controversial portion that came out of the House. And then the Senate's version of the Farm Bill, while not particularly controversial, did include a payment limit cap that was put in by Charles Grassley, Senator from Iowa, and some changes to the conservation portion of the Farm Bill. I asked Representative Davis how the conference will proceed.
So it worked just the same as it was last time. I was blessed to be a member of the conference committee in 2014. And this is a chance for our House members, Republicans and Democrats, sit down across the table from Republicans and Democrats in the Senate and really work out those differences. And I think you'll see a very good balanced bill when it comes to the ag sector. And I want to see more investment in research. I also want to see us actually have an incentive to get people out of poverty, to ensure that we will invest in them going get certifications that they need to be able to go back and get out into this workforce. When we have 3.8% unemployment and we have 9 million more people on food stamps today than when unemployment was at 9.5%, we got to invest in those families, get them out of poverty, and get them into the workforce that we know is available here in Central Illinois.
Senator Roberts, chair of the Ag Committee, said because his vote was so strong in support of that farm bill or that version of the farm bill, he hopes that in the conference committee he has the upper hand. Do you think that'll be the case?
Well, Senator Roberts is a friend of mine, and from what I know with Senator Roberts, of course he wants the upper hand. But there is no upper hand. And that's, I think, the kind of elitist attitude of the Senate. Let's sit down together. We're equals. And let's talk about putting good policies in place rather than who's going to have an upper hand and who's not. Because, frankly, good policy is good policy. And I know Chairman Roberts feels that way, too. I just think that comment was probably not the best one he could have made.
You certainly are a supporter of the SNAP and work requirement. How about on the other side? Are you in favor of the conservation changes that the Senate approved? Are you also in favor of the payment limits?
Well, I think I am always concerned when we start talking about limitations. I know our Senator Durbin introduced a provision to have an income limit on crop insurance. I think what that does, it ends up hurting some of our smaller farmers the most because the risk pool gets smaller and their costs go up, and I don't want to see that happen. What I want to see is a good negotiation. So I won't show you what I'm completely in favor of and not in favor of because I haven't been able to sit down and hopefully get a chance to negotiate it.
Is the research dollars included someplace within this farm bill for the land grant system?
There are. The land grant system and ag research dollars are there to protect our land grant institutions like the University of Illinois, who do a substantial amount of agricultural research and do a great job. I'd like to see more invested in agriculture that was not part of the House bill. And I can't wait to sit across the table from our senators and hopefully negotiate some better provisions so that we see more public-private partnership investments like FAR and programs that have continued to work in places like Champaign-Urbana.
Representative Davis, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Rodney Davis is a Republican representing Illinois in the U.S. House of Representatives and a member of the Agriculture Committee. He very well may be a member of the conference committee that tries to put together the Senate and the House versions of the Farm Bill. Those committee members have yet to be announced. Now, up next, we'll hear from Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible. He joined us just a bit earlier in the day to talk about the weather forecast. It's been really hot. And he's been really interested in the way the atmosphere has been working.
You know, Todd, I'm continually amazed by what the atmosphere can do. When I was looking at the weather in a lot of detail there on Wednesday night, preparing for like a Thursday morning weather briefing, I was paying close attention to this little feature that was coming across Nebraska. And this, if this doesn't just define summer for you, I don't know what does, because this small little thunderstorm complex blew up in Nebraska. But the way things work when we have an open Gulf of Mexico, a lot of moisture in the atmosphere, is that a small disturbance, a little thunderstorm, can blow up into a large, massive squalling of thunderstorms. And it's nearly possible to predict, even more than a few hours before they happen. And sure enough, this little complex of thunderstorms blew up, and it was impressive to watch. This one's going to be going into my classes here at the University of Illinois because it's a great example of what this does. So this one storm goes up, puts out an outflow boundary, and out ahead of it, new storms begin to form on that, and it turns into this long arcing line of thunderstorms. And they started in Nebraska, went through Iowa, went through Missouri, Western Illinois, and all the way down to Kentucky, Tennessee, and they're going to continue to move to the south, feeding on 80 80-degree dew point air. And I think that is going to be the name of the game for quite some time here in the Corn Belt. So what do we have going on? Well, there's a large ridge, a massive ridge. In fact, it is getting way outside of the norm in terms of its height. And underneath it, we have excessive heat warnings that stretch all the way across the Corn Belt. And I kind of tried to escape this. I'm up in far northern Wisconsin on a short family vacation, and the excessive heat warnings stop one county to the south of where I am, but it's still going to be deep into the 90s, way up this far north. And so we're going to be seeing, of course, triple-digit heat index values. And for a few days now, the next couple of days, at least getting us through Sunday, we're going to be seeing our actual high temperatures getting way into the upper 90s. And so it's going to be very, very hot over the next few days. And with the corn crop being so far ahead, remember, we're 350 growing degree day units ahead of average. This is kind of an important time period where we want to be making sure that we are not putting too much heat stress. I think the good news is this is not going to be sustained, a week of 97 to 100 degree weather. It's going to be just a couple of days here. And as we all know, our soil moisture is fantastic. We've had in the month of June so much rainfall across the primary corn belt that there's plenty of moisture to be working with for these plants to use to transpire. But what's the setup? We're going to be watching today the northern plains for a lot of severe weather. And then the boundary that's pushing through that region is going to try to get all the way through the state of Illinois by the time we get into Sunday and Monday. So we're going to be watching for this, line of storms. Storm Prediction Center still got a risk out for more of these strong straight line winds out ahead of these squall lines. So when you're watching the radar, be looking for those long arcing lines of storms. And if they start to bow outward, that is a key indicator that they're producing straight line winds. Well, what is this ridge going to do? Well, the ridge is right now going to be building over the eastern half of the country, but it will be retreating west with time. And the reason that's going to happen, an even bigger ridge is building into Alaska while a trough digs into the Pacific Northwest. We're going to get another one of these situations where we have a high over low in the upper levels of the atmosphere, and that helps pull that trough that's over the northwest to the southwest rather than letting it propagate east. So what does that mean? Our ridge, which moved to the east of us, is now going to pull back across the country going back west. We call that retrograding. And as that ridge does so, we're going to be basically seeing a lot of, maybe upper 80s, but really a lot of low 90 degree temperatures throughout this week. But under that ridge, the Gulf of Mexico stays open. We get this transport of moisture. So that's why I said these thunderstorms are going to be the name of the game for quite some time. Now, my big question is this going to be the pattern that we see developing into July? And I'll be honest with you, for us in the Midwest, we like to see ridges retreating west. When the ridge goes out west, in other words, if the ridge axis sets up from New Mexico to Montana, we get flow in the upper levels of the atmosphere that comes from the northwest. And over those ridges, we get these little bands of vorticity in the atmosphere. And all that means is that provides lift, which means we get northwest flow, we get thunderstorms, which we need in the month of July and August to just keep things cool down and also to keep bringing moisture into the ground. I think that's going to be the name of the game. But this is certainly going to be one of those years where I'm going to be concerned about warm overnight low temperatures and also going to be concerned about maybe, I know rain makes grain, but we're going to have a lot of rain that's going to be out there, I think, over the coming weeks. So it's an interesting setup, and really about the only place around the world that I've really seen starving for precipitation has been the Black Sea region, but it's not been a major weather story so far this year. So, a lot to be watching here, but I think it's going to be one of these situations where the heat and humidity and the thunderstorm interaction is going to be kind of the name of the game, at least in the foreseeable future.
Eric Snodgrass is from Agribull, joins us each and every Friday here on the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Please do visit our website. The address there is willmag.org. You'll find all of our agricultural programming posted in its entirety for the most part, not long after it airs on our radio stations, and sometimes even before it ever airs. That's at willag.org. You can also look us up as a podcast in iTunes, the Google Play Store, by using Stitcher, iTunes, the NPR app, or even the NPR One app. However you listen, thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us here at Illinois Public Media and willag.org.